Thank you, Caroline. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Paul McLaughlin, gardener at Ballagher Garden Centre, is going to be taking up his seat very shortly. So we'll be answering your gardening questions. Busy on the phones. Thank you so much to all of you for taking part. I work in this area and the lack of staff is simply down to burnout. Too much workload and no staff. These crews work long and hot hours, but it's a needle in a haystack because the numbers are just increasing. Now, I know it's difficult when you work within an industry to speak out beyond what you already have, and I do appreciate it. But also, I would love for us all, the general population, to know what it's like for you and how you within the industry believe it can be fixed. If that is not too difficult, I would love to speak to someone working in that area because you're doing amazing, amazing work under incredibly difficult circumstances. No psychiatrist in CAMHS, Donegal, no support anymore. Let me see. In relation to the proposed strike by health workers, I think their action in relation to not training students is going to affect themselves, firstly, as newly qualified people for 2024 means they will continue to be stretched and understaffed. Indeed, it doesn't make a great deal of sense, does it? Greg, my son has a family with autism and other special needs. I think Airbnbs have many benefits, and it's a shame that it's being discussed so negatively. For my son, a hotel would not be great for the kids as they would get bored easily, and also they need to save money. The prices of hotels are ridiculous, so I'm extremely grateful for the likes of Airbnb. Again, more conversation striking a balance then, is it? Wealthy frighteners, including Dubliners and NI, should not be allowed to buy up and inflate prices for houses and land. It's not frighteners. I don't know what that word's corrected for, but I appreciate it. Right. We've lovely Ukrainian families in our community. There are about 25 adults and children living in a large house near Glen and Carrigart. Yesterday, they were given notice that they were to be moved to Dunfanaghy. They weren't given a choice, and when they asked to view where they would be going, no answer was forthcoming. The families have been here about a year and are integrated nicely into our community. They've been told to pack everything up and be ready to get on the bus tomorrow, which is actually today, at 1 p.m. The owner of the house wants them to remain, and he will be at the property to see if anything can be done. I feel there is a serious human interest story here. Apart from being a concerned citizen, I've no other reason to bring this to your attention. Now, Dunfanaghy, of course, is not a million miles away from Glen, but it is. Does that mean they're going to have to go to different schools, be uprooted from that? Maybe they've found employment in the local area. If anyone has anyone else has any more insight into this, it's about 25 adults and children. They're being moved from a house in Glen at a day's notice to a property or properties in Dunfanaghy. Locals aren't happy as well because they've come to know them and to accept them as part of the community. And now I want to make sure that there isn't an issue going on here that needs more publicity from the likes of us. So if anyone has an insight into that, maybe someone is at the property that would be prepared to speak to us, and maybe we could speak to some of those affected and get an insight into this. It's really important that it is a problem that people speak out and get it out there. Maybe it's too late to change now, but it's just something we can't or shouldn't ignore. That could be one person's interpretation, but if it's a wider issue, we're here for all members of the community, be they Ukrainian or otherwise. So the text line is 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000, 074 91 25,000, if you've anything to add to that story. Okay, I'm going to clear the path for Paul McLaughlin to talk gardening. So I'll take our quarter past ad a little early. That'll free us up then for the next 20 minutes or so. Any questions? 086 60 25,000. The time is 9 minutes past 11 on this Thursday, the 31st of August, 2023, on what is the meteorological last day of summer. Paul McLaughlin, gardener at Ballagher Garden Centre. What summer?
Yes,
summer.
Exactly. I think summer ended a few days ago, or yeah, a few months ago. At this
summer
stage
was in June.
Yes, pretty much
a week in June. It's been it's been really, really depressing. I don't want to bandy that word around, but I think, you know, it would bring you down a bit.
Yes,
the summer, isn't it? It's impacted business. It's impacting gardens. It's impacting people's ability to get out and do stuff.
Absolutely. I'd say disheartening might be a better word, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of your garden, you've put in all the effort through the year and you just haven't got the rewards for it, or even time to sit out on it.
Yeah, but don't give up, because this weekend The temperature is going to rise, and heading into next week, it looks like the temperatures are going to be somewhat elevated. So there's still a bit going on there.
Yes, so traditional getting back to school sort of wee bit of weather it. Comes along then.
Yeah, get the kids, get rid of them.
Yes, exactly. I time to relax
and get the picnic bench out and sit in your own and eat a ham sandwich. The blue moon. What's its connection to gardening and topics of gardens?
Yes, I suppose a lot of people like. There are a lot of superstitions around gardens, I suppose you would call them, and that. But I was reading up the last day, but apparently a blue moon, if you go picking berries or picking flowers during it, you're guaranteed eternal beauty.
Wow.
So you are. So it's worth a try anyway, sure.
I think it's a bit late for you, Paul. I think
quite possibly.
I think the die has been cast.
Yeah, the ship has sailed there already.
Yes.
So it has. But no, it's funny actually, and sort of like we're, like in Donegal now, we're exposed to a lot more cultures and a lot. You see a lot more superstitions, even through the garden centre.
Should do a show about superstitions because we don't do that enough anymore, even just down to fairy trees alone. You could do an hour on that. Maybe we might get Professor Joe to have a conversation about superstitions, maybe ones particular to us here.
Yes,
if, absolutely. By the way, this has got nothing to do with gardening, but if there is a superstition that you have that you will not vary on, and let us know 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, and if it will incentivize you, I'll throw in a mug for one of those, a very rare 9 till noon show mug. But if you have any superstitions as it relates to the garden or whatever, stuff that you will not by hook or by crook go against, let us know 086 60 25000. All right, so the blue moon, obviously that's associated with some superstition. Now my hanging baskets look fantastic. They look better than any other year.
Right, very good.
Funny. Full of flowers. I never deadheaded them. I never took anything out of them. I never watered them.
Yeah.
I swear to God.
You get the water.
And they've never looked as good.
Yes, funny. You're on that side of the coin, I'm on the other side. I actually painted the house and took them down there last couple of weeks ago, and I never even bothered putting them back up again.
I think it's where they're at because they get the rain, but they don't get direct rainfall.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's a bit of a greenhouse effect going on because they're kind of semi under, you know, clear plastic.
Yes, I know what you mean.
And I think it's actually just worked really, really
That's
well.
That's probably amplifying the sunshine for them, and
sure.
Also.
But there's still plenty of colour around.
Yes, absolutely. There's plenty of colour around. Stuff like roses are going, and this time of year, dahlias especially, are looking brilliant.
Okay. So what should we be doing now? Freshening up our beds again? What does that entail?
Yeah, pretty much just generally, if your sort of shrub beds and borders are looking a wee bit untidy or a wee bit sort of bedraggled looking, the best thing to do is just sort of cut back anything that is looking a bit scraggly. And sort of maybe freshen up the mulch or something on them, you know. And just a wee bit of work now will keep them looking better into the winter.
Yeah. What's the situation with lawns? Now, the bit in front of my house, my son didn't do it at all. Doing his bit for the bees, he might argue. I think he's just a lazy git. But anyway, 1 foot long grass had to be dealt with yesterday. It's still mostly under my fingernails. There seems to be plenty of growth there around still.
Yes, there is a good bit of growth there, all right. Probably it'll be slowing down from now on, pretty much. So,
one or two cuts, maybe?
Pretty much, yeah. If it comes mild now, you'd still be cutting up to Halloween.
Okay. So you'd
be chatting maybe another three, if you know what I mean. But sort of raise the blades of the lawnmower a wee bit now, and that'll put less stress on the grass as you go along, basically. And just keep an eye on drainage. If drainage is an issue in your garden, maybe make sure any drains you have are working.
Yeah.
Just to stop the water building up over the winter.
And what about anything that might offset the risk of the moss returning through the winter? Is there anything we can do now to assist in that regard?
Yeah, pretty much. If you give it even if you have a bit of moss in the garden, give it a run with a scarifier, and it'll sort of remove the moss and let air move more freely through the grass, and should stop it sort of building on top of the existing moss through the year.
Yeah, and they can be hired as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Actually, if you go to our Facebook page right now, you'll see loads of ads from a great local company that are able to lease this kind of stuff out, hire it out really cheaply.
And they're as easy to use as a lawnmower. So they are. So it is just it's a good idea if you have a build up of moss now to treat it now, and it'll stop being worse next spring, basically.
All right, hedge cutting season begins tomorrow.
Yes, 1st of September's hedge cutting season. Sort of, it doesn't really impact on sort of wee garden hedges, if you know what I mean. But if you have a bigger job around your property, you can cut hedges from tomorrow. And cutting hedges this time of year is great in the sense that it lets it put on a wee bit of growth now before the winter comes in, so it leaves it sort of looking fresher through the winter period.
Greg, can you ask Paul, is there any low-maintenance flowers suitable for window baskets for autumn-winter? That comes in from Mary.
Yes, absolutely. There are a good few options there.
What's a window basket?
A window basket? Well, I suppose you get all sorts of different flowers, but I'd say they're probably combining the window box and window basket.
Oh, yes, okay, yes, of course it is. I couldn't make that connection.
But no, you get all sorts of different pots and things now, if you know what I mean.
That can stay out over winter and have a wee bit of colour to them.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, your winter pansies are perfect for it, and you get cyclamen in there would be quite good, or even you get sort of miniature hellers would actually look quite well. But sort of through the autumn winter period, people rely more on the greens and with a bit of flower, because you won't get the same sort of vibrancy as you get in the summer. But so
they still look beautiful.
Absolutely, and you incorporate bits of ivy and stuff in it that come down over the front, you know, can be quite nice.
I just wanted to ask about hydrangea that had very little flowers this year. Normally blooms very good. Maybe Paul could tell me. Thank you, love the show.
Yes, hydrangeas, sometimes you do get years like that. This year there's been sort of less sunshine, so maybe that's impacted on it. But what it would do at the end of sort of end of autumn or even in the early spring, give it a good cutting back, cut it back quite hard, and that should sort of reinvigorate the whole plant and give it a good feed as well.
Can tomatoes get blight? What are the symptoms and what are the remedies, if so?
Yes, tomatoes can get two different types of blight. You get early blight and late blight. It's quite common for them to get late blight about this time of year, as the fruit sort of, all the energy's gone into the fruit, so it leaves the rest of the plant susceptible to blight. No real remedies at this time of year, in the sense that you don't want to be spraying your tomatoes with anything, because you're going to pick them and eat them, obviously, in the near future. So this time of year, generally, you can sort of harvest them, and it's important to remove all the foliage and get it away and put it away far from where you'll be growing tomatoes next year, because the blight can reinfect, basically. So late blight, I would be slow to treat it. So it would be just sort of harvest what you can.
Okay. And you will know if the fruit's spoiled, obviously, will
it
you?
It shouldn't really affect the fruit that much. You'd see it more in the leaf.
You'll see
black spots coming on the leaves, and just sort of remove the leaves at that point.
Yeah, okay. Another question about hydrangeas. They did not reflower after last winter. Is there anything that can be done?
Pretty much just give them a good feed. I would say at this stage and hope for better next year. Even the springtime there, give them a feed that's good, high in potash, which should encourage flowering for next year.
When is the right time and how much should you cut back an apple tree?
Right time for cutting back an apple tree. Generally, you should in late winter. I would be slow to cut it back now, because if you cut it back now, it's actually going to regrow a bit, and then that growth will be sort of susceptible to the cold in the winter. So leave it until sort of after the first frost, into December or so.
So really what happens is just because there's a science to all of this, I presume, you are cutting it back when it has its lowest life, almost like in hibernation, so that when it starts to go, right, new season, I need to start growing, it's set and ready to go.
Yep, pretty much. You're just sort of resetting the plant as you go along. So in terms of how to do it, first steps, it's very hard without seeing an individual tree. It is a profession in itself, pruning apple trees. So without seeing the tree, but generally the first thing to do is remove any sort of dead or diseased timber on it. And after that, there, any crossing branches where they'll be rubbing, where the branches rub can actually introduce infection into the plant.
Now, just for those of you watching the show on YouTube or Facebook, you can comment there, by the way, on all the platforms, and the messages come straight through to the studio. So feel free to ask questions live if you have any. Doesn't matter which platform you're watching on, I have access to them here. How do you stop slugs from eating vegetables in my greenhouse? They keep eating my tomatoes, my lettuce and my other plants.
Yes, slugs, especially this year, slugs have been very active because of the damp weather. They love that, so they do. Generally, there are a few remedies. You can get organic pellets now, which aren't the same as the old blue pellets that used to actually kill everything around it, basically. So you can use sort of organic pellets. Otherwise, you can use your beer traps or your milk traps to trap them, basically physically remove them. Or the other effective way would be to actually create fences. Either use copper to go around them, or even Vaseline around the bottom of the plants can help to keep them back. However, the only thing, be using any of them sort of barrier methods, you have to be sure that there are no slugs in it. You're creating a fence. And if a slug's inside the fence, he's in his happy place. Yeah. Whereas if he's outside, you're happy enough.
So putting something in there really that's more attractive than what they really had it in there for.
Quite possibly. A lot of people now are using sheep wool pellet, which is like basically pellets of sheep wool, which have a few uses in the sense that they sort of retain water and then they're released slowly, which helps keep your plants watered. But as they sort of take in the water, they form sort of a felt that the slugs won't seem to cross.
They'd
be a new sort of organic method of dealing with
Until such time as the slugs figure this out and evolve and just go no bother.
Yeah, you'd be able to jump or something.
Exactly. I have a climbing rose. How much of it should I cut back? It didn't flower great this year, so I'm wondering, should I cut it back well or just leave it as is?
Yes, no, sort of. I would leave it now for another month or so, but then I would actually cut it back quite hard. Cut it back to maybe within 2 foot of the ground. It's very hard without seeing the plant. But generally, within sort of 2 to 3 feet of the ground, I would cut it right back to there and, like I say, hopefully reset the plant and see how it comes on next year.
There's still apples on my trees. Should I pull them off now, or how long should they be left on?
Pretty much I would tend to leave them on, in the sense it's a fine line, in the sense that I would leave them on to allow them to ripen fully and probably to sweeten up as best you can. But you need to be sort of, this time of year, wasps are very active, so you need to watch them for wasp damage. Wasps can actually eat them and sort of destroy your fruit.
Mm.
Or even a windy night comes along and blows them off, and then if they're sitting on the ground, like our friends of slugs will get them.
Mm-hmm.
So I would leave them on for as long as possible, but if they start falling off their own accord, I would pick them at that
stage.
Can
you give them just a sort of like a gentle toll?
Pretty much,
pull and see what kind of resistance is there. Like, can they not tell you when they're ready to go?
Pretty much, I think you reach for the apple and turn it 45 degrees.
Yes.
And if it comes off at that point, it's ready to go.
Yes.
And if it stays on at that point, leave it a while.
Did you ever do the thing whereby you rotate, once the apple is there, you rotate the apple through the letters of the alphabet? Each rotation is a letter, A, B, C, D, right? Whatever pops off, that's the first letter of someone you might end up going out with, right?
Yes.
And then
I was going to say, I remember doing it, but I couldn't remember the reason.
Yeah, and then you get it, and then you tap it on the skin, A, B, C, D, E, F, and then when it goes through, you know, that's it. So if it was G and H,
very good.
Be me, you see. Right. Did anyone else do that? I haven't done it for about 40 years, but anyway. When do you stop cutting the lawn? I know you've touched on this, but you can't beat a specific answer to a specific question. And it is one of those ones, A, people want to do the right thing, but B, want to know when they can. And can I just say one thing, by the way? And I'm speaking here on behalf of lawn mower repairers all over the world. If you can, get your lawn mower serviced over the winter. Because as soon as the sun comes out in April or something, there's about a million crappy old lawnmower stuck outside these premises, and everyone wants it to mow the lawn the next day. So if we're going to do it, and I very rarely do, if we're going to get our lawnmower service at the end of the season, do it through the winter.
Absolutely. I'm sure
I won't need it till April or March.
I'm sure they'd greatly appreciate that, all right, because like you say, they're just surrounded by lawnmowers in April time.
Scratching in September, and then lawnmowers everywhere in April. But anyway, back to the lawn.
Generally, sort of, as a rough idea, you're probably chatting around Halloween, but it's very much dictated by the weather. In terms of, if you get a mild September, you could be cutting on a wee bit longer.
So you could. And it doesn't. I don't really care how it looks. Like, as I said to you before, I have a sort of like, it's a flattened field with grass on it. Such, but as long as it's relatively short, you'll always get patches that grow a bit more than others. You know,
absolutely.
It's about how.
Yeah, it's about how diligent you are with it, if you know what
exactly.
I mean.
Exactly. I grew lilies this year and they grew great, tall and strong. When should I cut them back? They are still in flower.
Oh, well, if they're still in flower, obviously leave them, shall we say. You could sort of tidy them as you go along. Sometimes the outer foliage gets a wee bit, sort of turns a bit yellow. So
I know how that feels.
But nip that off and just let them flower on. And whenever they're finished flowering, you can actually cut them right back.
Could you ask Paul when to plant a holly tree? And do I need a male and a female for berries?
Plant a holly tree any time of the year, in terms of you can get them in garden centres and pots, so you can plant them any time of year. Traditional would be sort of now or early spring. Generally, I think it's the female produces the berries. So it is. But most ones you buy in garden centres will be pretty much designed to be female, if you know what I mean.
And there's
generally, in a sort of rural community like ours, there's plenty to do the pollinating and that around, if you know what I mean.
Yes, but indeed.
Once again, getting back to your superstition, the holly, there's more superstition around holly. Go on. That would take a whole show, so it would.
Right.
But in terms of, very unlucky to cut down, so there would be now, so we wouldn't.
Would you cut holly?
Not a hope.
Nope. I mean, you're really quite firm.
Oh, absolutely. No, a friend of mine actually tried to cut one day, and the chain of the chainsaw came off and just caught him in the ear.
My God. And any other stories like that, obviously, if it's not horrendous, 086 60 25,000.
He went up the following day to retrieve his chain, and he says where he touched the holly tree was repaired.
No.
Yeah, so that's sand. That was the holly tree still standing.
I want more of this. 086 60 25,000. All right. So you would not go near your holly tree?
No. Okay. Absolutely not.
Where can I buy a lilac rose?
Lilac rose, generally, most garden centres should have. It's most garden centres get the roses in early in spring. We'll be ordering sort of in December months to come in spring. So if you want someone specific, probably chat to your garden centre while they're doing the ordering, probably late November, December. Because generally we get them in early in the year and they'll be sort of picked through at this stage almost.
Okay, so I get you. Cole says, my superstition by coincidence would be to never cut down a holly tree. Very bad luck. What's a holly tree? I don't want to cut one down by accident.
Right.
So where would I find one? Make sure I don't have one.
Generally, pretty much any native hedge around here is going to have them in through it. Ooh. They're sort of the dark green glossy, but you know, the Christmas
yes.
sort of thing. Yeah. So some of them produce red berries, some of them don't. That's the male and female
thing. Ah, yes, indeed. I know them now.
Yeah.
My suspicion belief is picking heather for good luck and keeping it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. White heather, because I've been very lucky, all right.
Exactly. My suspicion belief is picking heather for good luck. Never know if it's true or just a myth, but I picked it and kept it to bring me some good luck. That comes in from Marie. Thanks for that. When I mow the lawn, there's a lot of white dead grass underneath. Can this be eradicated? Scarifying doesn't seem to be effective.
Right, scarifying should be effective at removing a lot of that. That's known as thatch.
Mm.
So generally, scarifying should help to remove that, all right. And a lot of the time, if you are scarifying, as opposed to it all one direction, maybe do it one direction, sort of lift all the grass and all the stuff out of it, and then do it sort of across itself again then. Sort of, so do it from two different directions will help to catch what the machine's missing the first time.
I have a self-pollinating apple tree. I have a self-pollinated apple tree. It produced one apple last year.
Right.
None this year. What can I do? I'm not laughing at you. Mm-hmm. It's just 2 years, one apple.
Yes.
It's not pollinating itself very well.
No, obviously
what's
not.
What's going on there?
Generally, a lot of them sort of self-pollinating apple trees, they've come out quite recently, so it may not be that old of a tree, if you know what I mean. But after 2 years, it should produce something. Definitely.
So next year, we've problems.
Yeah, pretty much. Sort of. A self-pollinating apple tree is actually two apple trees grafted onto one stem.
Yes.
So if you'd actually check the stem and make sure that the two are coming from above the joint, because maybe one has sort of died off and one apple has sort of taken over, which can happen times. But probably take a couple of photos of it and bring it to your local garden centre and they should be able to diagnose something from that.
Should they bring the apple with them?
Well, I was going to say that apple's very precious, so it might have to stay at home.
Is there anywhere locally you can recycle grass? I love my garden, but getting rid of the grass is a huge issue. And now that I'm cutting back my hedge and trees for the last time this year, it's a real issue getting somewhere to put it all. Now, this is local to where we don't know. Mm-hmm. So across the county, are there points or places that you can dispose of this garden waste?
I'm not 100% sure, but I think Bryson's Recycling, who run the recycling centres for the council, there'll be like ones in Letterkenny, Mulford, Carndonna. This is a cat. As far as I know, they take in garden waste.
Patrick on YouTube. So a fairy tree is a holly tree?
No, fairy tree generally would be a holly tree or a white thorn.
Right, so the ones that are in the middle of fields and they just don't generally go anywhere.
They're white thorned.
Right, okay.
Generally. Once again, I wouldn't touch one of them either.
No, I wouldn't go near one of them either. Patrick has a follow-up question. When and why to aerate a lawn?
Aerate a lawn anytime from now on, really. Ideally, it'd want to be quite dry. In the sense that so you're not creating mud as you go.
Yeah.
But an aerator is, you get a machine called a plugger that puts wee holes in it, and that improves the drainage and sort of prevents moss over the winter. So pretty much now, if it dries up a bit, would be perfect next week even.
Okay, so keep your superstitions coming in, not just garden-related things that you wouldn't do, and stories too, like that horrific story of Paul's friend, holly tree, went to cut it, chainsaw went, clipped his ear, went back the next day to retrieve the chain, and where he had impacted on the holly, it had repaired itself. Okay. A lot of people are, well, listen, people might go, oh, I don't believe any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You say, well, go down and cut that tree in the middle of that field there.
Right, absolutely.
It doesn't belong stiffening the cough, does it?
Yes.
All right, keep them coming into us, 086 60 25,000. We'll do one more anyway, will we, before the season's out? Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, because we're still in growth period. And
absolutely.
I think it's
nice to have if the weather comes good, there should be plenty of jobs to do anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly, of course. All right, Paul will be back with us. But for now, Paul McLaughlin, gardener at Ballagher Garden Centre, thank you so very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
Now, this Saturday, the 2nd of September, we'll see cinemas across the Republic of Ireland celebrate National Cinema Day. Cinemas across the country will celebrate the day with admission tickets at participating cinemas reduced to just €4, including premium seat screens and 3D screenings. The 2023 initiative is supported by Screen Ireland. And to discuss this, we're joined in studio by Mark Doherty, director of Century Complex in Letterkenny. And you guys, constant expansion and investment.
Yeah, we're going again. Good morning, Greg. How are you? Yes, good. We're going again. I suppose it's more family entertainment is what we're doing, and we like to keep moving, and we like to keep trying to innovate and trying to bring the best we can to Letterkenny and Donegal in general.
That's yeah, and it's so doing. Important, too, that we have indoor options given our climate, because even in the summer, You know, yeah. I think lots of us were like, well, what are we going to do now? Because it's bucketed and down.
Wasn't July and August lovely?
It was fantastic for you.
It was just great.
What are you building now on?
It's more family entertainment. The centrepiece of that is going to be indoor golf. Mm. Slight twist on it. So we're looking forward to doing that. There's a range of other activities that we're putting in as well, but we're still finalising those contracts. So
it's very good.
So, should be fun.
Yeah. The old song, what is it? Video Killed the Radio Star. Mm. Lots of people predicted the demise of cinema with on-demand streaming and all that kind of stuff. Mm. But it's not the case at all. Cinema still is a really important part of life. The attendances figures are good. Mm-hmm. And in some areas, it's gone from strength to strength, which is good, isn't it? Cause it's, I think it's because it's an experience. It's not simply a film.
Yeah, it is. It is an experience. It's a night out. And that's what cinema is about. It's a night out with, you know, family, with friends, with partners, with prospective partners. It's all those things. And it's a night out you can go out, you can enjoy yourself, and go home. And it's not late. And it's about that. So we have to try and cinemas have to try and make that experience as enjoyable as possible, to keep up with the new technology and the new innovations, and to give people that night out. So the predicting cinema's been dead from the 70s or something, I think. You know, TV came out, cinema was dead.
I think they're kind of giving up on that now because it's clear it's not. But that's it's not an area that has just sat on its laurels, though. Obviously, you have to have the latest screens, the latest sounds, the latest experience. Mm. You have to offer different seating products and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I mean, if you did stand still, you know, you could be in bother, but you have to keep innovating too, don't you? And moving with the trends.
That's the same with any business or anything. You have to keep moving. It's like a radio station. A radio station has to keep innovating, and cinema has to do that as well. So we try to keep bringing new things, new experiences, new seating, new screens, new sound systems. You try to keep doing that to give the public the best experience we possibly can.
What about you? How does someone get into being a cinema operator? Like, is this something that you wanted to do, or does it help that you have a love of films, or what was your path into this
summer job?
Yeah,
that was my path. I my first job in cinema was in Derry, in my hometown, and it was Star Wars.
Mm.
And it was a big old cinema called the Palace that used to be there on Shipley Street. I think there's a bar there now, but Shipley Street, and it was a big massive 2,000 seater cinema, and they ran Star Wars for 4 or 5 shows a day. And one of my jobs was to help show people to their seats. I think it was the year between.
Did you have a torch?
I had a torch. Wow. I had a torch, yeah. Actually, do you remember the old days cream trays?
Yes.
I had one of those too. Yeah. So it was one of those. I think everybody was roped in for those 4 or 5 weeks of Star Wars, and I was grabbed somewhere along the line, and we had good fun.
Did you open the cinema on the Port Road in the early 80s or start working there?
No, there was a cinema there. It was built in 35, I believe. Yeah. It was called La Scala originally, by the same company that owns this one now at the moment. And they opened there in 35. I believe it was the early 80s. They went from a single screen to 2 screens. Mm. And then we went to 3 screens and then to 4 screens. And then the company made the move down to the existing site. So it's been an evolution all the way down the line.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. And space, obviously, then you require space, of course.
You do.
You need cinemas to be able to expand.
Yeah, cinemas are a big building. And you know, we took opportunities when they were presented to buy additional space around us. And that what allowed us to increase the size of the cinema, add the screens, do what we're doing now, put on the play centre, the restaurant, and everything we're now doing. So it's all about giving that entertainment.
Rightly so, big IT companies get lots of credit for their employment, you know, factories, call centres and stuff. But I think sometimes the contribution to employment that retail makes, hotels, bars, and the likes of your complex makes, I don't think sometimes it's really is recognised quite as it should be. In terms of employment, you must have a huge team of staff, which is only going to grow from here.
We do. We have a big team of staff, big hardcore full-time staff, and then a lot of part-time staff. I think our current headcount between full-time and part-time is around about 95 at the moment. Now, a lot of those are young people doing their Saturday jobs and doing their Sunday jobs. But it's a lot of people, and yes, we will be added on. But there's a whole lot more Indigenous companies around the country that you never hear mentioned or you take for granted.
That's it, yeah.
That are employing a lot of people.
Exactly, like you can get a shop open and mm-hmm. could be creating 40 jobs and yeah. there's barely a pip. Now, yeah. we do try as much as we can here mm-hmm. to platform it, but if that yeah. were a call centre or something, it's like you'd have the Taoiseach up cutting the string. Do you
yeah,
know what
you
I mean?
Would,
but,
you would. And then Indigenous companies, you know, tend to hang on to people. You know, big companies at times can be quite ruthless, whereas local companies say, well, we'll write this out and see where we're going.
So what is Century Complex doing then for National Cinema Day?
Okay, National Cinema Day is on Saturday, and like every other cinema in the country, admission prices are €4 across the board. Doesn't matter what you're going to see, what screen it's on and what sort of seating's there, simple €4. And it's a way for us and the cinema industry in general to say thank you. Because we wouldn't exist without the customers who come through our front doors every day of the week, you know, day in and day out. So this is a way of us all getting together and say, listen, thanks very much.
All right, okay. There's going to be huge demand on some of the shows.
Some of the shows are currently sold out. Some of the VIP screens and the premiere screens are gone. So if you're, you know, if you're looking for that experience, check to see what's currently available. Other screens are selling fast and are going fast. So it's good to see people coming and taking advantage of the offer.
Do you see the next big innovation in the cinema world?
I suppose there's a lot of discussion and a lot of debate about that at the moment. As an industry, the focus this last number of years has been on the digitization. We're moving over to, you know, digital projectors. We're now moving into our third generation of those. Those are moving into high definition. There's a bit of sound is starting to become an issue again. But, you know, you can push that so far. Seating is a big issue at the moment. So it's currently, it's constantly evolving.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, well...
But there's not a game-changer thing that the industry expects in the next week?
Not that I see at the moment. Not from a solely cinema perspective.
Yeah,
I see a move to grouping entertainment
yeah.
together.
Yeah.
You know, so it's different, you know, cinemas, it's restaurants, it's play centres.
That's what yeah. you're already well established in yeah. that space. And, yeah. and then tying in a night out, something to eat, there's a show yeah. and on it goes.
Yeah.
And just in terms of 3D, now I've different vision in my eyes, so I've never really been able to take much interest in it. I remember Sky and the BBC investing yeah. so much in there, this notion that everyone would be in a pub watching the football with 3D glasses on,
yeah.
and that went down
yeah.
the way. And then
yeah.
the BBC stopped investing in 3D at all. But in terms of cinema, has it got an established market there? Like, is it a technology that, I mean, obviously, because you show the films yeah. and people come in.
Yeah.
But it's not the mainstream, is it?
It's not the mainstream.
Or the mainstay, if you know.
No, I mean, the mainstay of cinema has always been and will always be, you know, a decent film.
Good film.
A decent story.
Yeah.
That's always going to be it. Now, some films will lend themselves to 3D.
Yeah.
And in which case you'll throw them that so they will enhance the experience. You know, other films just won't. 3D doesn't do anything for them. It just, you know, well, okay, well, why is that there?
Yeah.
Whereas your good old-fashioned horror or your disaster movie, it can enhance that experience and give you more of a feeling. My suspicion, and it's only my suspicion, will probably be virtual reality and that end of things will probably be the next one.
Yeah.
But I think that's about a way, yeah.
But that's also unproven because even though Meta are investing so heavily in personal sort of headsets, for an example. But I'm involved, like I like gaming and all that kind of stuff, but it hasn't really caught on. Mm. Even the PlayStation VR headset, people don't want to sit for prolonged periods of time. They want to immerse themselves in something, but they don't want to lose the contact with the world around them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I actually have, and I'm really open-minded to technology, I have my reservations about sort of, how that? But listen, this is exciting. Who's to say what might come along?
I don't know. Could be. But we're social animals.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
We love company. We love, even if we're not talking, we love company.
Mm.
You know, we love to be sitting and sharing an experience with other people, whether that's in a cinema, whether that's remotely, you know, whether you're at home and somebody else is in their home playing the game. We like that. You know, do we really want to be playing with making up people?
I really don't think it's going to catch on, and I could be proven wrong, but I just, as soon as you start removing people from that social space, even at home, like I have was one of the early adapters of the PlayStation VR, you do the roller coasters and you do that, and after that you don't, because you don't want to be locked out of someone walking into the room.
I like the experience. It's like a good old horror film, and you're sitting there and and somebody down the middle of the hall sort of jumps and screams out of nowhere. You do. Yeah, exactly. It enhances the whole experience.
All right, okay. If people want to check availability and what's on, I presume go to the website, Mark.
Go straight to the website. It'll give you all the films that are listed for tomorrow. Go onto our app and on your mobile phone. You can see exactly what's on. You can book your seats. And you can do it from there.
Yeah, and it's right across the industry. All Irish cinemas are involved in this if you're a bit further removed listening to us today. Mark Doherty, Director of Century Complex, Letterkenny, thank you so much.
Great,
and
thank you very
continued
much.
Success
thank you,
and growth. Back shortly. And tickets are still available. And don't worry if you don't want to be called. You don't have to come on and speak on the radio. It would be lovely if we can get a chat to the winner, but that's not part of it. So don't let that discourage you from buying your tickets. You don't have to come on the radio if you don't want to. It's lovely to find out a bit about the person that wins, but as I say, it's not part of it, if you know what I mean. So you can just buy your tickets and you don't have to worry about coming on the radio. It's just literally a draw and that's it. And as I say, if the person wants to come on and say hi, fantastic, but it's as I say, it's not a function of the whole thing. You can get your tickets right now on our website, highlandradio.com. Click the summer cash draw. Buy your tickets there. If you can do so for fun and well within your means, a tenner each. One could be enough, but you can buy five, get one for free. Buy eight, get two for free if you want to group in with family and increase your chances, whatever way you want to do it. Highlandradio.com is the place to go right now. If you want us to process it over the phone, you can give us a call right now, 07491 25000, 07491 25000, or call up to us here, Mountaintop in Letterkenny. We can buy you can buy your tickets here from us. And it's all done and dusted. This time tomorrow, it's over. So if you want to be in with a chance to win £12,500, £2,500 with Lee, £10,000 with me, then buy your tickets right now. And we've brought so much joy to people over the last 3 weeks. Three of our wonderful listeners, each with €2,500 in their bank accounts, back pockets. Don't know where it is. Doesn't really matter. They have it anyway. So that's great. Okay. So if you want to get involved, and it's completely up to you, get in touch with us right now via our website. Okay. This is a ridiculous statistic as they're comparing apples and oranges. Long-term rentals advertise once every few years and are gone in days, whereas short-term holiday rentals are permanent adverts, always there. In every place in the world, of course, there will therefore be more short-term than long-term adverts. The only intelligent statistic would be over a three-year period. There were X long-term, Y short-term ads. And can I add to that, listener, because I don't disagree with you. You also need to take out tents. You need to take out, you know, it has to be full livable properties, because even some of these converted sheds or whatever are classed as full properties, which wouldn't be suitable for long-term rent. So that needs to be weeded out as well. Tom Foley is consultant psychiatrist with Inishowen CAMHS and joins us now. Tom, good morning to you.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
I'm sure for anyone involved in CAMHS and anyone working in it locally, it's a tough day, isn't it? Reading the reports and obviously the reports focus on the negative elements of the work. It's a difficult day for all involved, I'm sure, in CAMHS in this health region.
Well, I think it does make difficult reading some of the things in the report, Greg, but I think overwhelmingly the people involved with CAMHS really welcome the report, because I think finally it gives us kind of the attention on CAMHS that we really want at a national level. And it also highlights some of the really good things that are going on in CAMHS within the region. And it gives us a chance to talk about that, to draw attention to it, and also hopefully to get broader support for the things that we're trying to do. So while it is concerning, I think there's a lot to be reassured about. And I think also it's really welcome that this has happened.
Yeah, we'll talk about the positives in a moment, Tom. But I mean, we're speaking and had contact from people within the industry saying they're burnt out. They're working 12-hour shifts. They're under-resourced. And they're just at breaking point. They're burnt out completely. Is that a familiar picture to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would recognise that. I think for a long, long time, CAMHS within mental health nationally has been, you know, relatively underfunded and understaffed. And I think on top of that, with the pandemic, we've had a huge increase in referrals into CAMHS because it's been such a difficult time for young people and their families. I mean, that's led to, you know, the need to kind of prioritise certain cases over others. It's led to people perhaps overworking. And that in turn then leads to an increased turnover in staff. And that comes on top of the sort of background situation where it is really hard to recruit people in Donegal. You know, so, I mean, all of that does combine to make it kind of a difficult place to work and a difficult time to work in the service. But also the staff that are working in CAMHS are absolutely passionate about helping the young people, you know, and they get a lot of energy from working with those young people and their families. So I wouldn't say that it's all negative by any means. You know, it's a job that we love doing, and you know, you have to take that into account as well.
Is there an issue with recruitment and I suppose retention, i.e. are there positions funded and advertised that can't be filled at the moment?
There are, I think, across all the teams, across almost all the teams in the whole country, there are vacancies that are difficult to fill. You know, and traditionally it's been a funding problem, but it's also been difficult to recruit, particularly in rural areas like Donegal. You know, and we're constantly trying to recruit people and try new and sort of innovative ways to attract people into the region. And I suppose it's something that maybe your listeners can have an opportunity to help with. You know, if there's anybody there listening who has a friend or a family member who's had to leave the region to go and have an opportunity to work in a CAMHS service, then, you know, I'd encourage them to get in touch with those relatives and tell them that now is a really good time to come back. And, you know, I can tell you from personal experience that I did that. I was away for 20 years and I came back and, you know, I haven't regretted it. And I think it's a really exciting time to come back and work in CAMHS, you know. So I think we have to be thinking outside the box in terms of how we get people into work with us.
Now, Tom, and you can help me in this, in supporting you and those working within CAMHS and also in giving people who've been frustrated with it a platform to speak, I don't want to give the impression that people aren't being seen, that people aren't being helped, that CAMHS isn't open for business here in this region. So you might talk to that just to ensure that I don't, in trying to help, discourage anyone or make anyone feel any worse than they might already feel. So can you can offer, I'm sure, reassurance that children and young people are being seen and there is help there. Could you talk to that a little bit, please?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have done a lot of work on waiting lists over the last couple of years, and we've really had a big impact on reducing waiting lists. I particularly work in Inishowen, and we've got the waiting list down such that almost nobody is waiting over 3 months currently. And, you know, as of last week, we had less than 10 people waiting. So we've been really successful in kind of getting people in and getting them seen more quickly. And for those young people who are risky or who really need to be seen quickly, we are seeing them very, very quickly. You know, so that service is there. Now, it's not just CAMHS. It can be confusing for families looking for help. And I suppose when CAMHS is in the media, people think CAMHS is the only source of help. But we have a lot of partner organisations that we work with who also see people, young people with mental health difficulties and who support families. That's a whole range of community and voluntary organisations, as well as the more statutory organisations like Jigsaw, Primary Care Psychology. And, you know, the general practitioners who we work with really closely are in a really good position to work out where, you know, somebody's needs can be best met. But, you know, I would like to reassure people that if they need help, help is available. You know, we always want to improve and we have a lot of room to improve, as this report shows. But, you know, we will be there for the patients that we need to help.
Tom, you talked of, and you're a case in point of someone who went to work elsewhere, returned here. Who needs to do more to get that message out, I wonder? Is it CAMHS themselves or is it HSE to say, look, there are opportunities here, come back? It'll be a good working environment for you because the more people working in it, it'll help everyone. And you talked about thinking outside the box in terms of recruitment. Again, who do we need to be appealing to do that? Is it something happens locally within CALMS? Is it the local health group? Is it the HSC? You know, what is the pathway to the initiatives you think we need to be employing?
Well, I mean, I think there's a role for people at every level here. You know, nationally, the HSC has a role in attracting people back and attracting people to come and work here. But I think if we really want to have the services that we can have in Donegal, you know, locally and regionally, we need to do more to attract those people as well. You know, and that means having recruitment campaigns for people who are already trained. But it also means having pathways into these different professions, you know, for people who are at school, who want to be nurses or psychiatrists or psychologists or OTs or speech and language therapists, you know, we should make it clear that there is a way that they can do that, and there's a way that they can do it and make their life here, you know, close to where they've grown up, or that this can be an attractive place.
Are there full-time contracts available? If so, how many?
Well, there are vacancies, certainly, in all of those professions that I just mentioned to you. I don't have the figures offhand as to how many, but, you know, if there were people who had an interest in coming to work in CAMHS who were qualified in those professions, then, you know, I would welcome them getting in touch with their local CAMHS and asking what opportunities are out there, you know, because we definitely do have vacancies. And I think with the attention and the extra funding that these recent reports are likely to bring, there may be more opportunities in the future.
A caller says, no psychiatrist in CAMHS Donegal, no support anymore.
Well, I mean, I'm a psychiatrist in Inishowen, and there's another psychiatrist in CAMHS in Letterkenny. We are looking to recruit another psychiatrist, and that will be one of those opportunities that I mentioned. But, you know, it is a constant challenge because, you know, over time people move on. You know, and we need to identify people to fill
those positions. Do you lose staff to Northern Ireland, Tom? Do you lose staff to people who can nip over the border and work in mental health services there?
I don't think that's been a huge problem. Okay. I think the challenge for us is probably for people, you know, who want to work in the big cities and want to work close to the big academic centres. Maybe we lose more people in that direction.
Okay, listen, thank you for giving us a further insight into that. Is there anything in a minute that you want to clarify, Tom? Because, as I say, there's a lot of press out there that's focusing on certain elements of these reports. But in a minute, is there anything that you feel that would be fair for you to mention? And I hope you know, when we talk about things like this, Tom, it's the same with the hospital. We're here to support staff and anything we can do to help. We're not here to criticise or whatever. It's the system within an awful lot that this is being worked on that needs to be looked at. But it's not the people working in mental health services or working in acute services. They're doing amazing, very, very difficult work.
Thanks, Greg. I mean, I really appreciate that. And I think I'll take you up on that offer because I'd really like to get the message out, not just when there's a report like this, but just generally about the work that we're doing. And just very quickly,
we'll both return to that, Tom. Maybe even you can call in studio, okay. We'll join us on Zoom, and we'll talk about that.
Well, that'd be fantastic. Yeah, I'd appreciate that.
And the last thing you wanted to say?
And I mean, yeah, look, I just really want to reassure, you know, young people and their families that the staff who are working in CAMHS are really passionate about helping them, you know, and that is, you know, they've chosen these careers because that's what they really love. And I think, you know, we're now seeing the attention and the funding to match that passion nationally. And I think that's going to let us kind of realise the service improvement plans that we've got in place.
And we'll talk about that
really
more, Tom.
The service.
I have to head, and I appreciate that we got that in. Thank you very much indeed. Tom Foley, consultant psychiatrist with Inishowen CAMHS. Have a lovely Thursday. Back with you tomorrow, Friday, with all the usuals that you expect. Stay tuned. John Bretton's coming up next around the Northwest.